This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 311, brought to you by Hover. Please visit hover.com/iFanboy to get 10% off your domain name registrations, graphically, and iFanboy listeners like you.
Tell me everything that happened. Tell me everything you saw.
They had lights inside their eyes. They had lights inside their eyes.
Did you see the closing window? Did you hear the slamming door?
They moved forward and my heart died. They moved forward and my heart died.
Please, please tell me what they looked like. Did they seem afraid of you?
They were kids that I once knew. They were kids that I once knew.
I can say it, but you won't believe me. You say you do, but you don't deceive me. It's hard to know they're out there. It's hard to know that you still care.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 311. My name is Ron Richards, and as always, I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Whoa.
And Josh Flanagan.
Whoa.
And we're doing Keanu, apparently.
No.
We are from the West.
Dude.
Bodhi.
Some people do. There's different. Some people do Matrix.
Yeah, I do. Keanu. I go Point Break.
Some people go Point Break, and I tend to go Bill and Ted.
Bill and Ted, man.
Yeah. I'm Point Break. Anyway, we are from the website iFanboy.com, which is a website dedicated to the celebration and enjoyment of the comic book industry and the comic books that are created by them. And in doing so, we read a lot of comics. Every Wednesday, we get our stack of comics from our local comic book stores or our digital stores of choice and read them. And then one of us has the task to identify the book that he felt was the pick of the week, the one that he enjoyed the most that week. Goes to the website to write a review about it. Then we come here to talk about that book as well as all the other books that came out this week and just kind of what the cultural zeitgeist has to offer for this week in comic books.
Whoa.
Before we get into the show, quick reminder and a warning. This is a review show, so we're going to talk about what happens in the book, so we're going to spoil the events of said comic books. So if you haven't read your comics yet, you might want to press pause and go read them and come back, or come back later and listen, or just be, you know, fair warned and don't complain. And not many people complain anymore, so that's good. I wonder if we could drop the warning.
We should do it as an experiment.
Yeah, and then we'll get inundated with, "What, you ruined my books?"
What's a fair? How can you be fair warned?
Yeah, be fair warned.
That's a word that you made up.
No, it's a real fair warning.
Fair warning.
Yeah.
No, fair warning is two words.
Yeah.
Fair warned is a bastardization of forewarned.
Listen, man, I'm a linguistic wizard.
I've decided I'm not gonna let these go anymore.
You've had a lot of chocolate donuts.
I've had a lot of
chocolate. And the thing. the thing that gets me is that we get emails and it says, you guys said, and that is not the case. I will not be the scapegoat for your bastardization of English anymore, and I just want that out there now.
If you
want
to be innovative, that's your business.
That's fair. Yeah, no, I'm blazing new trails.
I take the language seriously.
Yeah, well, maybe
language. Yes, language has never evolved in the last 1,000 years.
Exactly.
It's not. It's not going to evolve here.
I look at the English language as more as a suggestion, starting point, or suggestion, or guidance. It's a base, and then I build on from there. That's kind of
we're basically getting down to the point of a lot is what's happening right now. Because it's two words, for 10 years.
one of my friends here in San Francisco freaked out on me the other day because apparently my use of a lot and my spelling of tonight came up, and he was like, "It drives me fucking crazy." I was like, sorry.
let's do the next thing.
That said, Connor had the pick this week, and Connor picked Batman.
I don't know if you guys have heard of this new writer named Scott Snyder, but he's pretty good.
He's on to something, I think.
We don't talk about him a lot, and I feel like it's time he got some recognition, at least on the show.
Yeah, possibly.
Batman number 3 was the pick of the week, and if it's at all possible, this series is getting better with each issue that goes along, and that's saying something because the first issue was one of the best of the new DC relaunch.
I think it's possible to say that. You just did.
I did say it. Yeah. See, Josh, I just said it.
That's nice work, Captain.
The story so far in Batman is that Bruce Wayne is back as Batman. He's back in Gotham, and an old acquaintance of his is running for mayor. And there's this shadowy figure named the Talon who's been attacking him, Bruce Wayne, and the mayor. And there's hints that there's a secret organization in Gotham City that is secretly running everything. One of those shadowy figures, like the Skull and Bones, or those kind of secret societies that are in the background, the Rothschilds.
Is the mayor his clone?
We'll get to that. So in this issue, Batman has finally stumbled on the idea that the owls.
Court of Owls.
Did you say it again?
Court of Owls.
Court of Owls is a real organization. The thing is, and Scott Snyder's talked to us about this in interviews, Batman's almost arrogant to the point of his mastery of Gotham City. He knows every street, every alley, everything about it, every person in it, every criminal, every politician, every cop. But
it's his city.
Right. So Scott's idea is, what if he doesn't really know the city as well as he thinks he does? And we have this shadowy organization that apparently has always existed, going back to the times of the city's beginning. And what if this organization is finally making itself known to Batman? It's not too happy about his existence.
I got to give Snyder credit. Like, after how many years of Batman? What was it? 70, 80, 90, 100, 150?
172.
Batman's been around since the 1400s. And that is a fantastic, innovative angle that I would never have thought of, or, you know, like that. I got to give him a tip of the hat for the concept.
And in this issue with the reveal, Scott Snyder is a horror writer. We know this. A lot of his stories are tinged in horror. He does a horror book for An American Vampire and another one in Severed.
He's a terrifying person.
And he's a terrifying person.
In his mind is not all right.
In this issue, we really had a horror structure in the way that the information was revealed to Batman. As he's investigating these clues, he finds out where the Council of Owls has been based throughout the city.
This is where I will tip my hat to him. The concept of the hidden 13th floors way outdid being John Malkovich.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
And then as it kept going out, the way it was laid out in those pages, magnificent.
Yes, it was very much a classic reveal, and I said in the review, very much like the most terrifying film thriller you can think of. The way the last part of this book was laid out, in the fact that Batman is investigating this apartment, he finds out that there's a 13th floor that's hidden underneath the 14th floor. Which you think would make sense, but a lot of buildings don't acknowledge the 13th floor. If you've ever been in tall buildings in a big city,
yeah. If you're in New York City or stuff like that, go into a very tall apartment building or a hotel or stuff like that. You'll notice it most in hotels. That's where I've noticed that there's no 13th floor.
Right. So the idea here is that when they built these buildings, they actually built hidden 13th floors that you couldn't even get to, and that's where all the bases are hidden, and they're all over the city. And as it's revealed, and Batman trips in an explosion, it was really laid out very well. And I also like the fact that it's tied into tied into Gates of Gotham, but in a way you don't have to have read Gates of Gotham to...
No.
Oh, yeah, I didn't read Gates of Gotham. I love that. So apparently his great-grandfather or grandfather, whatever, there's some sort of...
Great-great-grandfather.
Yeah, there's some sort of grant or trust, and everyone who has earned that has become an architect, and through the years they've built the buildings of Gotham, and it's almost like the Waynes have been funding this... these buildings of these hideouts, which I thought was just like way to layer it and tie it in and add a legacy factor. I didn't read Gates of Gotham. I know nothing about this stuff, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, and Alan Wayne makes his brief appearance in a flashback, and if you read that, it's even more powerful because you saw the formation of the city and Alan Wayne and all the weirdness that went into that. And it's the Court of Owls, and I have a mental block about the name for whatever reason, because it's 9 o'clock in the morning. I just, from the story wise, I thought this issue was very well structured. By the time I got to the end, I was breathless. And, you know, it was one of those.
You were underwater. You were in the bath.
I like to hold my breath while reading the book.
Right. When you really like a book, you get down. It's just your eyes are out, and then you're like, go. And you almost, actually, the thing is, that's one of the reasons, we didn't talk about this, but one of the reasons that he didn't keep reading Superman, it almost killed him.
How do you think we get the pick of the week done? I got to get rid of it fast. So that's story-wise, it was fantastic, but art-wise...
This is what we have to do to keep the show interesting for us.
No, it's just after 10 years, it's like, okay, how can I make this reading this comic a challenge? I hang myself upside down and read my books that way.
It's called autoliterotic fixation.
Yeah, exactly. I have a plastic bag over my head. I get those little arm thing. I got those little leg things over the closet, and then I get the comic book, and I just read until I can't. Until I kind of fade out, and then I quit, and then I snap back out of it.
It starts with a ball gag.
You're right. Yeah, yeah.
And that was like the first thing.
Yeah,
it wasn't working. When I had a stuffy nose that one time, that kind of added, but
that's creepy, but not as creepy as the owl face mask people.
The owl face mask people, especially the first drawing, the historical picture was. Creepy in a way, and Ron, you'll appreciate this in that Twin Peaks way.
Yes,
that kid from the movie who had the mask and he ran around in the background. Still haunts me.
I love the steampunky kind of owl costume.
Yes,
this is
well. That brings up Greg Capullo, who I think is doing just wonderful work in this book.
Just marvelous. Just,
I remember when he was first announced, a lot of people were like, "What?"
I like how Ron said something like a woman named Evelyn. It's just marvelous. It is.
No, you're right. I'm admittedly, I haven't seen Greg Capullo for years. Well, I saw him a little bit on Haunt, but Spawn.
Not really.
Spawn, I haven't seen him since the 90s at Spawn, and this is like ridiculous. Like, no wonder he had lines the whole length of 11th Avenue at New York Comic Con, because it was just ridiculous.
He's a heck of a storyteller, yeah. I think, as we saw in this one.
Yeah.
Especially in those conversations in the hotel room, which are quite. There's quite a lot of information to be put through there, but if you just look at those pages and you start to see how he built them, and where your eyes are going and what you're seeing, they cut to outside, and they zoom in on the eyes. Just it was a really good way to break up what could be a talking head situation.
I think it's really interesting to see after just three issues, Snyder and Capullo, who have never worked together, who couldn't come from more different backgrounds or different kind of experiences or different kind of places, coming together and gelling in within three issues.
It's fantastic. This is one of the best books out there, I think, right now.
Yeah.
The only downside, as Josh mentioned, is that two of the main characters look very similar, and whether or not that's intentional, we'll find out. But
The thing that I noticed in this one is that their eyes are colored exactly the same. And I'm like, well, now I'm thinking they're doing it on purpose. Or no one's paying any attention.
Well, I think their chins are slightly different. And one was in a bed and one was standing.
that was your key.
Yeah.
It was the bed.
And one called the other guy Bruce, and the other guy called him Lincoln. So, yeah. So.
And the hair was pushed different.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing is, his name wasn't even Lincoln, which is the weird thing.
Yeah, is his name Lincoln, or what's his name?
I don't know.
Grant? It's some president name, right?
It's Chester A. Arthur.
Also, got to give up Capullo. That cover, one of the best covers of the year.
Yes,
That cover is awesome. Like it had a Frank Miller esque to it. Like not bad, not.
But without the. that is literally as much as I'm going to comment on the Frank Miller situation. The hanging participle.
This show's going nowhere. Just relaying it out there now. We apologize early. I think this book is reaching event status in that when it comes out now, it's a big deal. it was in the same way that Batman and Robin, when it first came out with Morrison and quietly came out, it was a big deal. I think this is getting to that point
as
now.
Batman should be.
Yeah.
So next issue, Billy Tan.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Yeah, just wait until there's a fill-in. I mean, that'll be the question.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, right. And hopefully there's not. Hopefully Capullo.
As long as it's filled
not
by
true
Art
about Billy Tan.
Yeah. Just, yeah.
He's busy over in Hulk. We'll get to him later.
Yeah, we will. So, the Batman was great, but my pick of the week was a book that I was very, very excited for. A first issue from Image Comics, Mudman by Paul Grist. And what you viewers out there, and I know they're not viewers, might not know is that I'm a big fan of Paul Grist, and for literally 10 years, I've tried to get Josh and Connor to enjoy Paul Grist. First through his crime book, Kane, which neither of you liked. And then I don't even think I bothered with Jack Staff, which was his wacky kind of British superhero.
No, you didn't.
I didn't even bother. But
I tried to read it.
But Jack Staff is fantastic. Admittedly, it's out there. But here, Grist is with a brand new first issue doing a teen superhero called Mudman. And it was fantastic. And I'm assuming I'm the only person who read it.
So much fun.
You read it?
Of course.
And you liked it?
I loved it.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yes.
Tell me everything. Tell me all about it.
Well, I mean, you have tried to pull Paul. You have tried to push Paul Grist on us for 10 years.
Yes.
Haven't enjoyed it, but you know, I figured I'd give it a shot. They're on Graphically now, so I just went and downloaded it in the morning. Yep. You know, it's much easier. The digital thing is much easier to sample things, I find, because I don't have to, you know, there's less. It feels like less of a commitment.
There's nothing to lift.
Exactly. So I gave it a shot, and I thought, for one, the cover image was very striking.
Yep.
The way that they had the traditionally the graphics are on top, the title's on top, and it's not an innovative to put it in the bottom, but just it was a very striking image to put everything on the bottom and have him sort of in the mud. And it's Mudman. The name's kind of funny, so I gave it a shot. And it was basically a kid who stumbles upon these mud powers by falling in this mud. And it's very much in the classic superhero vein in that the kid gets powers, he doesn't understand them. It's somewhat similar to Spider-Man in that he wakes up, he's got these mud abilities, and he's confused, and he goes to school, and they start manifesting themselves. And it's such a – I don't want to call it a wacky concept because that sort of pigeonholes it as a humor book, but it is a bit of a wacky concept, and it's pulled off in a way that doesn't make it feel jokey.
And that's one of the things about Grist is that Grist has a wacky tone to him. Like if you read Jack Staff gets really wacky and out there and all that sort of stuff. But – and also because of the way his cartooning goes, his cartooning is very – I want to say
–
cartoony. I would say lighthearted to a certain degree and that sort of – you know. But, you know, I love his art style. I love his storytelling. I love his layouts. You know,
the art's fantastic.
The art is good. Even subtle things like when he's home with his dad and his sister, and he's got the text of the news in between the panels. So, you know, like it was just a subtle touch, like very simple like that. And I don't know, did you read his little essay in the inside cover?
I didn't read the essay.
Oh, well, if you get a chance, go back and read that, because it's a long thing of basically him just saying, I love comics, and this is what I love about comics, and da-da, and so now here is my brand new comic, you know? And it's very much, like, if you love comics, I challenge you, if you like Spider-Man, if you like teen superhero, just fun comics, you will enjoy this. So, yeah.
I really enjoyed the cartooning aspect of it. I really liked the layouts. I thought all of that was very inventive, and more interesting than a lot of what I read this week. So that was definitely something to enjoy about it. The story was kind of, like you said, something I'd kind of seen before, though the difference on it would be that it was like rural British as opposed to not even so much rural, but just it was British as opposed to a lot of the American things. I didn't love that part of it, but it was definitely hard not to be impressed by the craft in those pages.
Right. So cool. Well, I'm glad to hear that you guys gave it a shot. Mm-hmm. Trying new things. Yay.
I flipped open on the cover of Justice League number 3, and then I got distracted by something. I went back, I started reading, and then I was like, did they get a fill-in artist on Wonder Woman? What's happening here? It was a little weird moment because I forgot which one I was reading, and I was
I see.
Because gotcha. The first few pages are all Wonder Woman fighting, and I just forgot what it was.
Well, I had an epiphany with this book.
Go for it.
I had an epiphany with a third issue in a Justice League, the challenge I was having with it, and why I wasn't totally loving it, and why it wasn't quite jiving, whatever. And then I figured it out. This is an Elseworld story.
And then
as soon as I figured that out, I was like, I'm on board. Fantastic. And the challenge of it is that I know this is supposed to take place in the past, what is it, like 5 years from the current present day in DC or whatever? But what I don't understand is you've got Geoff Johns writing both Aquaman and Green Lantern and Justice League, and I like Green Lantern and Aquaman in this book way more than in both of those books.
Aquaman had one line in this book.
Had one line in this book, and I was like, yes, sign me up right now. He has
Quint mutton chops.
He has sideburns. He has an attitude. He's a chain, and he's confident, and who's in charge? I vote me. Like, fantastic. Even Green Lantern being aloof and kind of all stuff like that. I don't understand how it goes from this to the Green Lantern of now, which is Sad Sack Hal and all stuff like that. I'm sure we'll find out. But for me, in my head, I was like, okay, that doesn't matter. This is just happening somewhere else. I don't need to worry about anything else going into it. And then it completely increased my enjoyment. Like, Wonder Woman doesn't match up to what's going on with Azzarello. Like, it's just all – so it's Elseworlds. And that works for me. So
that's kind of how you have to look at every comic.
Yeah, possibly.
Really increases your enjoyment. But I love the Wonder Woman in this book. I thought the way she was portrayed as sort of – she wasn't naive, but she was new to the culture. And, you know, she's just – and not just American culture, but sort of people culture.
Yeah.
And the character – I think the characterizations are the strongest thing in this book. As you said, Green Lantern's great. He's sort of – he's a dick. Not a total dick, but he's kind of a dick. Aquaman's great characterization. And – you haven't had a lot of Superman, and Flash has been kind of standard. But other than that, I think this has been wonderful from a character piece. And I loved the little teaser for Darkseid. I thought it was really well laid out.
That page is wonderful.
Yeah.
Of him, that pose, whatever, that of Darkseid just sort of standing. He's in his tunic there, by the way. It should be noted.
You're pro tunic, aren't you?
No, very much.
Yeah.
But listen, the guy would have different outfits. I'm cool with that.
Sure, yeah. I get that.
You know, he's gonna have a ceremonial thing. He might stay in the tunic just to prove a point. Like, I don't need this for you.
Right.
But he's got it.
Right.
That wasn't a joke.
I know. It was very funny. But the capper at the end with Aquaman, I don't think I've ever been more excited to see Aquaman. And as soon as I turned the page, I was like, yes, this is Aquaman. You know, so I just don't understand how it ties into the other stuff. But we'll find out. So. He's got chains.
It's part of the whole problem with their reboot is that they're keeping so much of the old stuff. It doesn't make sense with the new stuff, and you just have to.
You are concurrently reading. I think it's difficult. It's not difficult, but if you read Wonder Woman and then you read this right away, they're kind of two different characters. So it's a little hard. Like, we know, but even then, it doesn't make it completely. Like, it just make your head have to jibe with it a little bit.
Right. So. Well, talk about trying to make your head jibe with something. So Fear Itself 7.3.
Oh, just tell me you liked it.
No.
Do you keep buying them?
Oh, because I just need. It's just perverse. It's Schadenfreude. Like, I need to know. I just need to know. and the thing is that, like, if anything, these 0.3 issues have cemented the, like, it's just, it's like insult to industry, insult to injury. It's also an insult to industry. Pour salt on the wound. So Captain America, Fear Itself 7.1, Captain America undid the Bucky death, right? That was right. The whole big thing. Fear Itself 7.2, which we didn't talk about, Thor, didn't undo Thor's death, but introduced Tenaris, the God of Thunder now, who's whatever. Fear Itself 7.3.
He's no bitter at Bill.
Yeah, that's for sure. So Fear Itself 7.3 with Iron Man is the post Fear Itself face off between Iron Man and Odin, as well as Tony Stark and Grey Gargoyle. And I didn't read Iron Man, but from what I took from this and from what I understood from everyone else talk about it, is the whole Iron Man corner of Fear Itself was two things. It was one, that Grey Gargoyle destroyed Paris and turned everybody into stone and fucked everybody up. And then that Tony had a face off with Odin, and the whole he popped open a bottle and gave a sobriety to get the weapons they needed to win. So this issue is two things: Tony talking to Grey Gargoyle, saying "Why should I let you live?" And then Tony also at another point talking to Odin, and Odin kind of pointing out to Tony how insignificant he is in the grand cosmic scheme of things. And then I guess to prove that point or whatever, Odin then restores Paris. And
so this whole point. Yep. Epilogue has been one big reset button.
Not a reset button. You know, on your computer when you screw up and you hit Control Z and it triggers the undo function. Three issues completely undoing everything that should have had weight in that entire event.
Except for Thor's death, who's still
dead. Except for Thor's death, but they have a different Thor and blah blah blah.
They'll be back.
Well, maybe that's a good long term decision, and then it's bookended by the obsessive need to have comic book stories that explain what all that was, sort of like that Spider-Man series that I don't remember the title of, so which didn't need to exist except for people who needed it to exist.
What Spider-Man series?
What are we talking about?
The one after didn't Joe Quesada do a Spider-Man miniseries after?
Oh, right, right. The One More Day.
Yeah, with the Paolo Rivera, right?
Yeah, the one explained how he didn't go to them.
Oh, oh, one moment in time.
There you go. Same sort of thing. Like, yeah. It wasn't really worth reading, but it cleared up from something from here to there, which nobody really needed cleared up, except the people who really needed it cleared up.
Nobody needed it to be cleared up.
So there's people.
Yeah, I don't know. But, yeah.
What happened to the Spider-Man baby?
That's a good question. What happened to the Spider-Man baby?
That's who's in the closet.
We're not going to talk about that. I don't know if people keep bringing that up. I left it out there. It's gone.
So it's hard to find a bigger proponent.
I've been following this show for years. I'm sorry.
It's one of those days. It's hard to find a bigger proponent for Bendis' Avengers than I've been. I've been enjoying it. I've picked a lot of pick of the week over the years, but I'm starting to get to the end. You know, it happens a lot where I got to the end. All of a sudden, I just stop enjoying something. Like, it happens with TV shows a lot where I just, shows I love, all of a sudden I just go, you know, I'm not enjoying this anymore and just stop. I've dropped New Avengers. I thought about dropping this Avengers, but I love Acuna, so I picked it up, and I loved this issue because it was, sure, it played on all the classic Avengers tropes of gathering the team, including the news conference and the crowd of people outside breathlessly awaiting who's going to be on the new team and the news and the 24-hour news coverage talking about it. But I just love these issues, these gathered team issues.
So did this reinstill your faith in the Avengers? Or?
It gave me another issue. You know. But the thing is, like, there's a shot in this issue where Cap's looking at a painting of the classic Avengers team, you know, from the 80s, the Scarlet Witch, Hawkeye, Vision era, you know, Black Panther, Giant Man. And I was like, man, I missed that team. And then, like, two pages later, Vision's back.
Yep.
And not teenage Vision from Young Avengers, but Vision.
The actual Vision, yep.
And I actually, I was keep like, fuck lady. Yeah, Vision. He's the, you know, he's as much of the Avengers as Captain America is, really.
Was he in the closet? Not gay. Maybe because they were married, so like it would make sense that like
he was.
Like, oh right, my ex-husband's in there or husband. I don't know what their legal status is.
Teenager on the Young Justice team.
Yeah, but that wasn't him. Him. That
was. Yeah, well, it was his. Well, he's a robot, so it's, you know.
He was a robot.
It was his program. It was his, you know, sentient whatever, you know.
But.
And I think that an Avengers naming ceremony is probably an unsafe place to be. That place is, you know, it's ground zero. Something's gonna happen there. I would stay far away.
Well, Norman Osborn shows up, which was, I'll admit, Ron, the one thing I was like, oh,
yeah.
I don't know, but I really love Acuna. I can't get enough of his Avengers stuff.
Yeah, he's fantastic. I mean, it's funny because it's like I was a little concerned because there was a lot of talking heads, you know, like it was very. It's a Bendis book, you know, so I wasn't sure how Acuna.
But it's also gathering the team issue, which is always talking heads.
Yeah, no,
one of those every like six issues now, right?
But this was a real classic one.
Yeah,
like they had those trades they put out of all the gathering the team issues, and this would have fallen right in there.
Yeah, and I love that, you know. So Storm has joined the team.
How do you feel about that?
Whatever, who cares? You know, it's fine. Although I did always like the fact that the Beast was the only mutant that was on the X-Men, whatever.
But now Wolverine's been free.
Yeah, well, what's funny, what I loved was, so in the chat, so basically this is the Avengers, not the New Avengers, and they say, let's leave Luke and the New Avengers, let them do what they want to do. And so they bring on Storm, and they bring on the not Maria Hill from Secret
Who looks just like Maria Hill.
Just like Maria, except she's got
Victoria?
Like Victoria? Yeah. No, Daisy, whatever.
It's a new character.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh.
And so they bring them on, and so they're going out to do the press conference, and in the shadows at Avengers Mansion, because all new Avengers and Avengers are living there, and in the shadows behind the door is Spider-Man and Wolverine, and Spider-Man goes to Wolverine's like, you going out there? And Wolverine's like, no, they got their mutant and their spider person. Like, yeah. So now we see the end of kind of Wolverine and Spider-Man as part of the proper Avengers, and now they can just be on new Avengers. So that's
the current team, and this new team is Storm, Random, S.H.I.E.L.D. chick, Iron Man, Spider-Woman, Captain America, The Vision, Red Hulk, Protector, was that his name?
Yeah, whatever. That was all, Novar, the Marvel boy, which is
and Jeremy
awesome
Renner.
Name. Yeah, and Jeremy Renner. they just subtly dropped in the new Hawkeye costume. It's totally Ultimate Hawkeye now.
And there's been no explanation as far as I've read in my books. Well, I've read it's just he's wearing this costume.
Yep. He's been wearing that for 40 years. I'm not saying I should be changed, but I can acknowledge it looks ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's purple.
Yeah,
and it's good to know that Stanley from The Office got a new job as a TV commentator.
Yeah, I was like, wow. I'm glad I'm not the only person who just saw that. I was like, that's Stanley from The Office. But yeah, it was good. It was fun. It's what I would want the Avengers to be.
So, yeah. For a while, anyway.
Yeah.
So are either one of you guys looking to register a domain name by any chance?
Daily.
Josh, I know you've got your whole thing going on, your side job.
I don't need any new ones right now, but...
Well, if you want a domain name when you're ready to expand, Josh, you can give Hover a try. If you ever registered a domain before, you know, it's really complicated. It's a big hassle. Hover makes it really simple. They've got great tools. Everything is easy. And you know, if you've never done it before, tools can be complicated and annoying. They don't try to upsell you. They just let you do what you need to do. You register, you renew your site, whatever. It's quick and easy. All the stuff you need to do.
And that's the thing. I use some other domain, and totally honestly, not, you know, whatever. The fucking upsells just dry. I just renewed a domain name the other day, and it's like, no, I don't want email. No, I don't want protect. You know, like, yes. Just let me renew it. That's all I want to do. Yeah.
It's like when you book a flight and they want a hotel and car. I don't need a hotel and a car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so.
So Hover has a huge help selection with tutorials, got videos, got FAQs, they got forums for you can discuss with other people if you got problems. It's great because domains can be complicated. You may not know all about it. You may need help, and it's very easy to find help at Hover. And
not
best
everyone
of all,
has a Ron to email.
That's true. Best of all, customer support. There's no wait for phone support. If you got from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern time, someone picks up the phone every time. It's a genius solution. You can always talk to a real person, which, as you know, if you ever tried to call like a bank – and then you talk to a robot for 4 hours until you get to a person. It can be annoying. Nothing fancy about Hover, just good intentions and great execution. So give them a try at hover.com/ifanboy. Go check them out. If you buy anything as an iFanboy listener, you'll get 10% off if you go to hover.com/ifanboy.
Okay, excellent. So check them out. And also, important to note, go to hover.com/ifanboy. Check them out that way. It also lets them know that you're checking them out, that we sent you there, so it helps us. So just good.
Yes, even if you're not looking, maybe you're curious, go check out hover.com/ifanboy.
Exactly. hover.com/ifanboy.
Maybe you want to start that blog about pugs and turkeys.
Maybe.
That's a thing. Don't do that. I'm going to do that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a thing. See, people love cute animals, but it's also Thanksgiving time.
You gotta be timely. So.
Yeah, you do it now though, because you really don't have much time. You're like 4 days. Wait, I mean that's me though. You're not doing it. I'm gonna do it next year. You wait. I'm gonna get that now. So Starborn number 12 was the last of the Starborns and the last of the Stan Lee Boom series to conclude, and it was like it was the whole way through. It was a fun, big, adventurous guy learns his actual past. All sorts of power, spaceships, aliens, cosmic blow-up fest, with an uplifting ending, I thought.
Did it actually end?
Yeah, no, it ended.
Yeah,
it's
clear that they planned it, yeah.
I dropped off this once the crossover started, and I know it wasn't a big crossover,
and
but...
It's not crossover. You know it's not a crossover, Connor.
Well, no. I read the first issue, and the other people showed up, I didn't like them, and I was like, oh, yeah,
It was like a page and a half.
Still, it's like the thing that you liked was on its own, and it mixed up the thing you didn't like. And
it was like a great art all the way through, fun concept. You know, it was like 3.5-4-star book all the way through.
I said from the get-go, this is one of the best science fiction books I've read in years. And Roberson, and now Roberson's doing a science fiction novel. Like I heard when he was talking to Suntress on Word Balloon, he's doing a science fiction novel for Amazon's new imprint. I'm all over it because like he gets science fiction.
Good time.
So I was reading Incredible Hulk number 2, and as I was reading, I was like, you know, the art's a little inconsistent.
Which Hulk is this?
I was like, one page looked really good, and then the other page a little shady, then a little different. I'm like, is that Will's Portacio? And then I go look at the cover, and oh, everyone drew this.
There was 10 people between pencils and inkers.
It really gets kind of baffling in that it's Silvestri with Will Portacio and Billy Tan as pencilers, and Michael Broussard and Eric Basaluda as pencil assists, and Scott Hanna as finishes, and then John Weems with Rick Basaluda, Joe Weems with Rick Basaluda, Jay Layson, Don Ho, and Crime Lab Syndicate as the inkers.
Don Ho, the famous Hawaiian musician?
Yeah. Yes. It's amazing.
Where has that guy been? You know, fans complain about this a lot, but I don't think we're thinking about the accountants.
Right.
This is a minefield.
Yeah, exactly. This is got to be tough. How do you pay and all this stuff?
Royalties, digital royalties 4 years down the road. They're like, oh, God, it's this Incredible Hulk thing again.
Yeah. So, I mean, no, but that said, it didn't really get in the way. It's a good story, you know. Like,
There are apparently legitimate reasons why Sylvester couldn't.
Yes, yeah, I heard. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's still, I mean, at the end of the day, we're judging the book. And his stuff was his stuff, and I enjoyed it. But by the time we got to the end, I thought it really took a downward turn in terms of art. And also, when you have many artists, you have things like Hulk's giant skull necklace disappearing and reappearing from page to page.
Exactly. Yep.
But or that guy with no neck who walked up with a tuxedo.
Right. The Hunchback. The Hunchback. Although I got to give him credit. That I'll take a mad scientist. I'm down with a mad scientist.
Story-wise, I think this is lots of fun. It's Mad Scientist Hulk. And I like the mystery of not knowing how Hulk and Banner split. That being a reveal, but...
Whoever drew that panel of the mad scientist in the tuxedo with the guns, very Tim Sale-esque.
It was, yeah.
Which I was like, oh, that's like
that you gotta love it, a comic book. Whoever drew that panel, Who did that one? Yeah. I don't know. It's one of these guys.
Yeah,
it's a lot of guys.
So I feel bad for Aaron because I know that he's given it his all, and it's like
He's probably all right.
Yeah, he probably is. Yeah, he's.
I mean, yeah. I haven't looked at the sales, but I'm guessing he's all right.
Yeah. Anyway, okay.
He's good.
Connor, bring me the sexy time.
Yeah,
Catwoman number 3 was almost pick of the week, very close.
Wow.
This book is getting better with each issue. In the last issue, Catwoman's friend and fence, the cliffhanger was she was dead in her apartment tied to a chair. And this issue, basically the chickens come home to roost. You can't keep stealing from powerful people and expect no blowback. This is very much like, I guess, like the movie Heat, when they find, their buddy killed by their informant. Like the bad stuff she did blew back on her, and the people that she ripped off came to find her, and they found her friend, and they killed her, and they beat her really badly, and she broke out and fought. It was very emotional. She flashed back through meeting her friend. We got a bit of their relationship as she lay there with a bullet in her head and a beaten body, and then Catwoman, of course, got very angry, broke out, beat them all to death, beat half to death, and almost killed the main guy until Batman showed up and stopped her. But it was very much.
And they had sex.
They didn't have sex because she was very upset that her friend
died. They smooched a little.
Yes, well, because you sad, but...
Right, yeah, I know, because when girls that I'm consoling are sad, I stick my tongue down their throats.
They didn't do any of that.
I'm just kidding.
The thing is, we came off as cavalier before, but that was...
No, I flipped through this in the store. I'm not reading this anymore, but just because it's too much. But I flipped through in the store, and the art, I was really impressed by the art. I thought it was really good.
There's a couple of really dynamic shots in here, including one I put up as panel of the week on fanboy.com. And they went up with the splash in the first issue with the sex, and obviously that was an attention getter, but this really has been a fantastic Catwoman story since then. And people complain this is the same, pretty much the same Catwoman from before.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really good, though. If you like Catwoman, it's a great story.
Cool.
We talked last week about. Ron had thought that Uncanny X-Force is the best book over at Marvel. And I'm still under the impression that Thunderbolts, number 165, and the series itself has just been so good.
So good. I'm not disagreeing with you.
And it's just a matter of taste or whatever. Yeah. And this is just like another one. It just keeps rolling on. I'm starting to, I haven't been a gigantic Jeff Parker fan in the past, but man, the books that he is doing now, he's just been doing great work all year.
Yeah.
And it's really been impressive, and these books have just been fun, and it's everything that I'm not finding over in an Avengers book, which is fine because I can find that kind of thing I want here with these sort of characters. These characters who, by the way, I didn't know anything about most of them, and I've found a way to become interested in them. And
hey, listen, I'm the biggest Marvel zombie. I have no idea who Centurius is.
Yeah,
no
and it's
idea.
Great.
Yes, he's awesome.
He's important.
Yeah.
Is that the same guy, right? The smart dude?
Yeah, the smart dude. Yeah.
Kev Walker back on this. He's alternating arcs with Declan Shalvey, and they met the Avengers, and the story was a quick little one with Zemo. It ended. I liked all the character interplay between Moonstone and just this weird situation that they were in. And
my favorite thing about this is that they went back. They tried to escape the raft in present day during Fear Itself, and they fixer screwed up, and they ended up going back in time. They ended up in the 40s in the Alps and teaming up with Cap and the Invaders and all stuff like that. This issue ends with them getting enough power to jump again, and I finished the issue and I was like, oh, where are they gonna end up? I had that, like, I can't wait for the next issue, and like, I love the crazy villains quantum leaping through, it's a great concept. I hope it never ends. It's
all of that intrigue is going on between them, and sales on this are awful.
I went back after you guys I was gonna say ranted, but that's not the proper term. I raved about the last issue, and I bought it and loved it, and I picked this issue up and loved it too.
Yeah, it's great.
So I'm back on. I was loving the book before the Fear Itself tie-ins. I found those boring. I dropped the book, and now I'm back. This was great.
Yep. Awesome.
And sales are abysmal.
Abysmal.
Go buy this book.
Go buy it. Go pre-order it.
But yeah, you'll really like it.
Yeah.
So get the book. Over in terms of outrage, there's been not very much on Wonder Woman's mother. In a gratuitous sex scene, silhouetted side boob.
Yeah,
with Zeus. I don't know why no one was upset about this.
I
maybe
think
because it was one of the best drawn scenes I've seen in a comic book in a really long time.
Totally agreed. Yep.
I think this was a fantastically constructed book, much like Batman. There was an A plot and a B plot. The A plot was Wonder Woman finding out about her parentage. The B plot was these other Amazons putting away the dead bodies from the war. And the one rabble-rouser trying to stir up trouble against Wonder Woman amongst the masses. And they both collided in a wonderfully constructed scene where Wonder Woman shows up, punches the rabble-rouser, knocks her out, and they move on. Like you think you're building up this big sort of fight, and she just walks up and knocks her out and says, "I'm Wonder Woman," and the rest, falls back.
I like right at the beginning that Strife is still hanging out. Like, I did all this, but I'm just going to stand here while you clean up. What a dick for a lady. But I mean, that's just the mean thing to do. This book is so good. I'm calling this. This could very well get the Eisner.
Wow.
For like best series. I mean, look at the work these two guys are doing.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, agreed. So.
Cliff Chang.
I love Cliff Chang. He's great. Yeah. So those are the books that we enjoyed this week, but a whole bunch more came out. If you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can see them all, and you can go do your pull list, and you can rate and review them, and then you can also identify what your pick of the week was, and we're going to highlight the top five picks of the week from the iFanboy community, and number five was Rick Remender and Stefano Caselli, I think was the artist, on Venom number 9, and 0.6% of you made it your pick of the week. Oh, it's one of those weeks I see now as I look at the numbers.
We call it Batman Week or Snyderism.
Number four was Catwoman number 3 with 1.3% of the pick of the week percentages. Number 3 was Justice League number 3 with 2.4% of the pick of the week percentages. Number 2 was Wonder Woman number 3 with 3.6%. And at the time of recording this podcast, the number 1 book according to the iFanboy community was Batman number 3 with 86.2%.
That might be a record.
86.2%. It's insane.
So, I think it might be a record, actually. I'd have to go back, and I'm not going to, but I think it.
So, Connor, your pick was Batman. My pick was Mudman. Josh, what was your pick this week? It has to end in man.
I don't know if I clicked it. So it would either be Wonder Woman or Thunderbolts.
Go with Thunderbolts.
I would probably go with Wonder Woman.
Okay, Wonder Woman. Fair enough. User reviews.
Cruz reviewed X-23 number 17 and gave a story of 5 out of 5 and the art of 4 out of 5, and 0.5% of you made it your pick of the week, which in this week wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Probably ranks at number 6. Cruz says, when this iteration of X-23 launched, I decided to skip it. I didn't really like X-23 when written by anyone other than Kyle and Yost, and the art wasn't to my taste. But then I saw some of the things that were going on in the book and was intrigued. This issue is everything I used to love about Marvel, the perfect balance of fun and drama, the underlying soap opera romances, the sense of a truly connected universe. Marjorie Liu is a great feel for the character and those around her, and I'm excited now to head back and pick up the first trades. I fear that many people will pass on the book knowing it's been canceled, but that would really be a loss. This is fun, enjoyable comics with some really great character moments and well worth checking out.
And that is exactly what has happened, because one of my favorite artists, Phil Noto, is now drawing X-23. And,
oh, hey now.
And I heard about that, and I was like, awesome, I'll start picking it up. And then I heard that it was getting canceled, and I was like, oh, screw that. So I'll probably go back and still read the Phil Noto issues, but yeah, so...
It happens. They announce cancellations, people stop buying them, or they join.
Yeah, that's what happens, yeah. Yeah, it sucks. So, and it's the thing is that everyone that I know that's been reading X-23 has spoken highly of it, has said that, you know, Marjorie Liu is doing a great job on it, and it's a subtle, nice little book that's doing its own little thing, and you had Phil Noto, and come on, but... You know,
I enjoyed her Black Widow.
That sounds like market poison.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Metamorphic. On Birds of Prey number 3, gave the story a 4 out of 5, the art a 4 out of 5, and the pick of the week percentage was 0.1%. And Metamorphic says, it's not easy to take characters you've known for years and make them feel fresh without alienating fans from before. It's also not easy to introduce a new character but make her immediately seem like an old friend. But that's what Straczynski has done, at least for me. 3 issues in, and I already adore Starling.
Straczynski.
That's what I said.
Sounds Dwayne. Like Straczynski.
You said Straczynski.
I did not. I don't say that name. I guarantee you. 3 issues in, and I already adore Starling. She and Dinah, for a favorite of mine from before the New 52, seem to have a genuine relationship that feels, well, like real pals. That's the kind of thing that makes a book like this work. I was worried about Katana at first, as I wasn't keen on her redesign, but she's already added a different aspect with her being a few words. Now we have Crazy Ivy. It's a little balancing act of personality, but it's working and working well.
Excellent.
This is a good, solid book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I enjoy it.
Is the art still solid?
The art's fantastic. Yeah. It's Jesus Marino, and he's wonderful.
Yeah.
But it's a fun action sort of adventure book. We haven't really, and we're still in the midst of the first arc, and it's very fast paced. So we haven't really got a chance to sort of feel for the whole world, but it's really quite good.
Excellent. So, so go to ifanboy.com/comics, do your pull list, and rate and review your books, and you write a review, and we'll try to feature on the show. I love seeing new names, new people that I don't know, and so it's always good to see fresh voices in the iFanboy community. But even though a bunch of comics came out this week, there are so many more comics to be enjoyed, and you can enjoy them with Graphically. Graphically is the parent company of iFanboy, and it's one of the leading digital comic solutions with over 5,000 comics from over 250 publishers. Trust us, there are a lot of comics. And it's got comics from Marvel Comics, Image Comics, Boom Studios, Archaea, Dynamite, and we just recently announced Top Shelf Productions has now come on board to Graphically. They've done a full commitment to digital, and we're psyched to be a part of that, and so now you can get all the great top shelf titles on Graphically and all the various Graphically devices, as well if you're on a Barnes & Noble Nook or an Android device or the new Amazon Kindle Fire and you didn't return it, you can get top shelf graphic novels that way as well.
I don't think you're supposed to say that now.
And we've got even more exciting stuff coming down the pipe from Graphically. It's really cool. So if you go to graphically.com, you can check out comics on the web. You can also check it out on your iPhone or iPad. If you have an iPad, go to the newsstand and try some, you know, if you're a fan of The Walking Dead or Invincible or Savage Dragon or Irredeemable, you can subscribe. Those are actually awesome apps that were developed by Joshua Emmons from 4Star Studios, who's now a member of the Graphically team, and a really cool way to get your comics delivered to your iPad. It's amazing. So yeah, definitely check it out. And also, you know, Walking Dead is still rolling on. If you still haven't caught up on The Walking Dead, it's all up on there and Graphically, as well as available for the Barnes & Noble Nook and the Amazon platforms and that sort of thing. So definitely doing cool stuff. So go to graphically.com, follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/graphically, or on facebook.com/graphically. And we thank you for your support.
Email time. Tony writes and says, here's one for the podcast, the letter column. I'd like to hear your opinions on unrealistically skin tight superhero outfits.
Oh, it's one of these weeks, isn't it?
This is something that it's been a growing pet peeve of mine for a while. Seeing someone like Mike Diodato on art on your site today made it reach a surface level annoyance. There's Daredevil jumping around naked with red body paint, and I can see Squirrel Girl's rib cage and stomach muscles through her fur. I understand, yes, skin tight spandex outfits are part of the conceit of superhero comics, but come on, things have gotten ridiculous for some artists. It's as if they are photo referencing naked models and color filling them. And yes, there are plenty of artists who don't do this, Chris Samnee, Steve Rude, Mike Mignola, Alex Ross, who all different styles, but actually draw people with clothes. I'm not coming from this from a prudish stance, but I guess from an aesthetic one. Much as I am a Bendis fan, I would not share recent copies of New Avengers with some non-comic reading friends, as I think the art style distracts from the actual story, as they focus on Ms. Marvel's spectacular booty hanging out of her thong. Is this a recent trend? Is this based on sexual fetishism, eroticism? Am I a curmudgeon?
No, yes.
There's two issues. Because the painted on body costume thing is different than the spectacular booty thing, I would say.
Yes, okay.
These are different things. This isn't new. This isn't a recent thing. I mean, this is what comics look like. So I think that there's a lot of – when comic book artists, you know, learn how to draw, they start with anatomy, they draw a body, and then they put a logo on it.
Right.
And that's been like that for a really long time. It's something I didn't even notice for a really long time. I noticed it before Connor mentioned it, but Connor, when Gary Frank was on Action, you always made a point to point out that, you know, the outfit looked like an outfit, looked like clothes.
Some wrinkles. Yeah. Well, it's funny. It's actually going in the buckles.
It's funny that Tony mentioned Steve Rude, that when he's not getting arrested, I remember reading old Nexus comics, and I thought the exact same thing. Like, it looked like clothes. Like, Alan Davis to a certain degree as well. Like, even though it's all poofy 80s... 80 sleeves and things like that, the clothes look like they're draped over the body, not that just they're painted on.
The thing is, I think that there's a place for both things. If I were to give you a preference, I would say I like the touch of realism. I always tend to gravitate towards art that does that a little more.
Oh, we're going to get into this again?
What?
We're going to get into this again? Your photorealistic problem?
No. The realism of the, if it's fabric, it's clothes, it's going to look like fabric. It's not going to look like painted skin.
Right.
But at the same time, there is something to in comics that's kind of classic about that kind of thing. I think of John Buscema or John Romita, or, you know, with those costumes.
I think it's
pretty
Buscema.
Much look like that. Yeah. But, huh?
I think it's Buscema.
What did I say?
Anyway, it's funny that you mentioned Alex Ross too, because I remember during Kingdom Come, like there was that time in the 90s when we all loved Alex Ross, and I did love him, and I think Marvel is my favorite thing by him. But one of the things that drove me crazy about Kingdom Come was that I didn't like how realistic it was. Like, remember that Flash pose? with that smart.
That was from the poster, the Barry Allen Flash. Yeah. Oh, we look kind of dumpy. But I think it's more about art style. If you look back at the Kirby books, they drew them. They didn't draw every little muscle in the characters because that just wasn't the way they drew people.
Right.
Probably because it was faster.
Right.
But now they do every little muscle and
They did draw them. It's just Coletta erased them. Hey now.
If conceptually it's ridiculous, that's why you don't get in the movies these people wearing costumes like that. But
yeah, and that's really where that conversation started to come back. I think in 2000 when X-Men came out, and as everyone was like, "Well, what are they going to be in spandex? Why are they going to be in spandex? Because they would look ridiculous."
Yeah, yeah.
But that's superhero comics. That's how they look.
That's also true.
Yeah. It's not a new trend. It's always been that way. It's just at least in the last 20 years, when they've 25, 30 years, they've drawn every single muscle on everybody.
Yeah.
But that's just the changing art style as opposed to the old way.
I will grant you that either of those things has something about it that's acceptable. Sometimes it goes too far, I think. In the sort of those super rendered bodies or something like that.
That's why I liked John Cassaday's old work, who he used to draw them like they were in clothes, but they were still tight, but they weren't, you didn't see abdominal muscles. You saw sort of, fabric that stretched across the stomach.
One of the things I really liked about the Captain America movie was they showed him when he was doing the USO shows, and they showed him in what the costume would look like in real life.
Yeah.
And he looked ridiculous.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
And you know why? And so when people – and I don't hear it as much as I used to. Yeah. Why can't they just look like the comics? Well, because it would be ridiculous. It would look like that 70s Spider-Man made-for-TV movie.
Which was awesome. Shut up. Your face.
If that came out in a trailer today. that costume looks great.
People freak out.
Anyway, all right. So on to the next question. Dave from L.A. says, I feel like I'm the only human on Earth who does not like Scalped. I even pushed myself to get as deep as 2 trades in, and it felt like nothing but a chore this entire time. The experience plagues me with feelings of loneliness and doubt. Please soothe my bitter despair by telling me which highly praised titles you've either hated or have no interest in picking up.
Not everything is for everyone.
Exactly.
And if I really like something, then you have to take that into account, that what the other things that I really like. If Ron really likes something, you have to take into account the other things that he really likes.
Yep.
Because there's all sorts of stuff that Ron really likes that I really don't like, and that Connor really likes that Ron really doesn't like.
Yep.
And there will be things that you really don't like.
You know what else is way more people don't like Scalped than do.
I was going to say, only about 5,000 people do.
Yeah.
It's not.
So when you take into account the 7 billion on Earth, the ratio is much more in your favor, Dave.
Yeah.
You are in a majority.
Yes.
This is a very good point, actually. That's...
And it doesn't have to be for you. There's all sorts of stuff that's widely acclaimed that is awful to me.
Yeah.
You know, when you go on the Netflix top 100, the number 2 movie is and has been Crash for years. That was a horrible movie.
Yeah, sure.
To me. Connor's going to tell you he liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it. I didn't love it, but I liked it.
Well, awful movie.
Awful movie indeed.
So. Which book do you not like, Josh? Which highly praised book?
What's a highly praised book?
All of them.
A lot of them. I think I don't like Justice League nearly as much as a lot of people do. I mean, if you look at the stuff that I've been pulling lately, I haven't been into. But there's a lot of really classic, stuff that, it wasn't necessarily for me. Some of it I haven't. I'm trying to think of something now. I'm trying to look over at a book I bought that I was supposed to really like, but then didn't.
I'm trying to think. I'm not loving Action Comics right now.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. But
Yeah.
Hey, that's fine. Okay. Here's a really good example that should fall right into my wheelhouse. Shade the Changing Man is a classic Vertigo story that people love. It's got Chris Bachalo on art, and it's written by Peter Miller. I hated it. Couldn't get into it at all.
No.
Not my thing. Doesn't mean it's bad. This is going to spawn a whole debate.
Yeah. What about you, Connor?
Well, it is bad if you think shit. I don't, you know what I mean.
I don't have much interest in picking up Journey into Mystery.
Okay.
I love Kieran Gillen. I've liked everything he's written.
Have you read it, though? Or?
No, but the thing is, what do you have no interest in picking up? I have no interest in picking it
up. Yeah, it's interesting. Well, yeah.
Commander, Ron.
I feel like, Master and Commander, totally. I feel like those are two different things, because I had no interest in picking up Journey into Mystery either. But I think the distinction between having no interest in picking something up, for me, Superman titles, majority of Batman titles, things like that. But then the other question is, You know, are there widely praised titles that you have tried and then still like critic? Like a lot of people, we love the work of Jonathan Hickman. A lot, or Josh, you've been critical. Not a lot of people. You didn't. You fall a little short in his creator-owned stuff, like Pax Romana and
Actually,
Red
Wings. I like his creator-owned stuff more than his Marvel stuff. I think that it's fallen apart at the end a little bit on a few of them.
Right, but do you see my point?
Like, Pax Romana should be my favorite thing ever.
Yeah, you see my point. You see my point there. They're two different things in that. In terms of what are do you have no interest in checking out? For example, I had no interest in checking out Journey into Mystery, but then I did, and turned out I did like it. Whereas there's a good chance I could have checked it out and been like, no, it's still not for me. Those are two different things. That's all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know.
Okay. I don't like Dan Slott's Spider-Man work.
Yep. That's fair. Yeah.
I definitely don't. You know, here's a good one.
Yeah.
I understand absolutely that people love Usagi Yojimbo. And I've read it a bunch of times, and I can even enjoy it a little bit. But I for whatever reason, if I read it month to month, if I read an issue here or there, I'd be like, oh, that was really fun. But I just don't get excited to read those issues.
Yeah.
It falls a little flat for me in that way. Every once in a while, I'll read it.
You've got a long-stated hatred of Japanese people.
Well, listen, we can get into the concentration camps and why it was a necessary thing and why it was overall a good thing. But we don't have time for that.
Yeah. Right. Or rabbits too, really.
Those things are the AIDS of wildlife.
Yep. Jesus Christ. Wow.
They tear up your garden, they get in the way, they're nuisances, but no, you went right to AIDS.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a choice. It was a respectable choice.
Wow.
Though.
Yeah.
All right,
I'm really working on my deadpan, and I'm really proud of myself right now.
Really dead. If you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We've also got a voicemail line you can call into, and our first voicemail line's got a question that I've been thinking about as well.
Hey, guys. My name is Eric, and I'm from Michigan. And with the Defenders series coming out in December, Doctor Strange is obviously in the limelight a lot now. And I was wondering, since the death of Brother Voodoo, Strange hasn't seemed to really step up to be Sorcerer Supreme anymore. So my question is, do you think that he will become Sorcerer Supreme again? Is Sorcerer Supreme even really needed in the Marvel U? What do you think? All right, thanks. Love the show.
Was he in a duck blind?
He might have been.
We were goose hunting.
So to answer this question, yeah, so Dr. Voodoo became the new, or Brother Voodoo became Dr. Voodoo and became the new Sorcerer Supreme, and in the pages of New Avengers, it looks as if he sacrificed himself and died, and therefore leaving the world without a Sorcerer Supreme. And now that the Defenders is coming back and Dr. Strange is leading with a spiffy new costume, with no cape, by the way, which is wrong for so many reasons, will Dr. Strange become Sorcerer Supreme? Who knows? I don't think so. I think part of what makes Doctor Strange interesting now is that he's no longer Sorcerer Supreme, and that's like a dimension to the character and that sort of thing.
And let's be honest, for years, no one cared about Doctor Strange.
Yeah, exactly.
And so if you've given him something else to give them something to do with him, maybe that's a better way to go.
I think they're trying to find relevance for him that involves not having the costume, which we think is awesome, but most people might not think is awesome.
Right.
And involves him not being the source. They can just do it. They can do whatever they want with him because no one, at the end of the day, not enough people care.
And then also, you know, to go with the comics, you know, comics laws, if you didn't see the body, he ain't dead. And so, Brother Voodoo.
Even if you have seen the body.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's a good point, too. Yes. So, you know, there's a good chance that, and I wouldn't be surprised that Brother Voodoo or Dr. Voodoo will come back and still be Sorcerer Supreme, and that'll be a whole other story and all that sort of thing. So, I don't think Doctor Strange is going to be Sorcerer Supreme again for a very long time. So there you go. So if you have any questions, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697.
Real quickly, Colin, Ariel wishes you a happy anniversary.
Okay, there you go. Happy anniversary.
Oh, that was really nice. is a Don't Miss podcast? That's taking a Thanksgiving hiatus.
No rest for the weary. No, you.
Oh, that's
crazy.
Right.
You Heck crazy? Man. So last week, Paul talked to the Tim Truman and Ben Truman behind Hawken number one, another Western. And as much as we wanted to do 3 weeks in a row of Westerns, we took a little break and a break from the Westerns. And actually on Monday on ifanboy.com, and you can subscribe to Don't Miss on iTunes, and you can hear me talk to Jonathan Hickman about Fantastic Four number 600, which is if there was ever an issue that you shouldn't miss, it's this milestone issue. So if you enjoy hearing Jonathan Hickman talk and be smarter than me, then you should listen to Don't Smith.
Smith.
If you enjoy hearing me talk and hearing other people talk, I can recommend the Talksplode podcast. You may remember about a month ago, I released a podcast with Blair Butler and Charles Soule. We got a lot of really good response on that about making comics from a writer's standpoint. And as a follow-up, I spoke with artists Declan Shalvey and Kevin Mellon on Thunderbolts and Heart, respectively, about that same thing from the artistic standpoint. I had a very long, probably almost 2-hour conversation about various aspects of you know, being an artist in comics today, especially if you're in the sort of lower or middle tier of that, or working your way up, or wherever you are. And lots of useful information, really interesting conversation, a couple of good guys, and I think it's definitely worth your time to listen to, even if you don't want to make comics, just as knowing how things are done and the people behind it.
It's always a good conversation.
So that's available on ifanboy.com.
Also on ifanboy.com is my Pick of the Week review, Josh's Book of the Month review, all kinds of daily content about comic books and the comic book industry. You can find that all at ifanboy.com, including the About page at ifanboy.com/about, where you can find all of our staff, us and all the staff, with our social network links and who we are and how to be our friend online, including at twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy. And we also do a video show. Last week we talked about comic book tone, dark versus light, so dark comics versus light comics, and how the industry handles that. Next week, all it says here is artists. I don't know what that's about.
Yeah, it's about artists.
All right. That's all I know.
Fair enough.
We're talking about some of our favorite artists. We spend a lot of time talking about other stuff. We're just going to say what it is we like about art and the artists available right now. Theoretically.
All right, cool. So if you have any questions, you, as I said earlier, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Any questions, comments, concerns, anything you got, hit us up. We always like to hear from you.
If you like us or don't like us, as happens from time to time, rabbits, they hate us, you can go write a review on iTunes for this show or for the any of the podcasts we do. Or if you like any show, any podcast, go to iTunes and write a review for it, and that helps more people discover it, which helps us out long term. Even better than that, though, is the personal touch, the glad hand. So you think somebody would like the show, you like the site, mention it, talk about it, pass the word along, send the files. We've already had the USB in a bottle.
Yes, which is awesome.
Now you have to up that ante.
Yep.
And capture it on video.
Make it happen.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
Cool. So we want to wish everybody in the United States a happy Thanksgiving this week. Hope you enjoy the long weekend and get a whole bunch of comics on Wednesday and, you know, cozy up and read them all instead of watching football. And, yeah, or watch football if that's what you like to do. So,
Not everything is for everyone, Ron.
Exactly. Everybody has their own interests. So, okay, so until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I stand behind what I said about the Japanese.
Dead hearts are everywhere.